影分身の術。
Hello and welcome to Talk No Jutsu, your go-to anime discussion podcast. It's your boy Lao Guy, and here's my co-host Admiral Beifong.
Hey, what's going on, everyone? It's Admiral Beifong. Today's discussion is all about Pikachu, Ash, and their journey together. We're going to be talking about Pokemon and how to catch them all. To kick it off, I'd like to hear a little bit from Lao Guy, his experience, and like what you know he knows about Pokemon. What's your background, man?
This is heavily exaggerated. I know of Pokemon. I know a little bit about Pokemon. Most of my Pokemon knowledge is sequestered to my childhood, which I have repressed. I'm just kidding. But I do know a decent enough amount about Pokemon. I was around. I was a youth when the original Pokemon Red games were released. And then I played Emerald, Fire Red. I never played the Diamond and Pearl series, but I did watch the show.
What was your first device? What was the first device you played on?
So it's funny. I played, I never had handheld devices growing up. Actually played on emulators back when they were a thing. So,
oh, wow.
Basically that's how far back we're talking. I never really played these growing up. I played these games later on as a youth, you know what I mean?
More middle
school days, but the anime was kind of what I was more exposed to. I watched, you know, the original Pokemon, gotta catch them all. I'm more of a 151 Pokemon kind of guy rather than the grand scale. So. But I'm sure Admiral Beifong knows all about the other 1,000 other Pokemon that are out there. Am I right?
No, I could probably recall a good like 400. But
okay,
once we after Diamond and Pearl, I get my memory gets a little groggy. But I actually did play the games on the Game Boy. I had the Game Boy Color that I bought off a friend in elementary school for like.
Wow.
I gave him a bunch of like these markers that had like sparkles in them, and he gave me a Game Boy Color. And I was like, you know what's funny? Like now thinking back, I feel bad, but at the time I was like, that's a fair deal, you know?
Bro, that was such an unfair trade for you that it's ridiculous. You fleeced this man.
No, you know what happened? He was getting the new Game Boy, and so he had the color that he was going to chuck anyway. So I'm like, oh, here are a bunch of, you know, what do you want for it? And I just pull out my pencil case and I'm like, take this. And he was like, yo, bet. And he gave it to me.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that was my first experience. And he had Pokemon Red. I played Red. I played a lot of the games on the Game Boy. Once we jumped out of the Game Boy, I didn't play a lot of the games, but I was hooked onto the anime for a really long time. I guess this is like a separate shout out. I'm also creating like a homebrew D&D Pokemon game.
Ooh, what are we calling it?
We're still working on it, so I'm going to finalize the name probably when we have lots of the sessions completed, like lots of the maps completely mapped out and the characters developed.
You heard it here first on Talk No Jutsu, folks. We're coming out with a Pokemon D&D podcast coming soon.
Oh my god. But yeah, I guess to give a little background, everyone here hopefully has seen the original animated series with the 151 Pokemon in the Kanto region with Ash Ketchum from Pallet Town. That's like the original series. So the D&D game takes place a little over a decade from there. It's really cool. It's in the future. You have a lot of, you know, different aspects of Pokemon that are integrated. A lot of different characters that we've known and loved have grown. But I'll leave it at that. Everything else, you'd need to play to figure out what's going
That's
on.
That's awesome. We're looking forward to trying it out. I'll be definitely hitting you up as soon as that's ready. Yeah. So stay tuned for that. Hopefully we can get that pushed out as soon as possible as well. But in the meantime, since you do have more experience with Pokemon and you have more hands-on experience, I'd love to talk to you about sort of how has the game and the series and sort of the Pokemon brand changed with time? Because what it is now is clearly very different than what it was when we were kids. But it's hard for me to pinpoint exactly what that is since I've been so out of the loop. So I'd rather ask you.
Yeah, and I think you were definitely involved with the first two or three generations, like Kanto, right. Johto, and what's the other one? Hoenn, I think. Those are the first
Hoenn,
three.
Yeah.
And Sinnoh. So those are the four. So those are the four that are really popular with our generation. I think after Gen 4, Gen 5, people started falling off. So
after Diamond and Pearl is what it goes.
So after Diamond and Pearl, they ended up going with Black and White, and then they also made like a Black 2 and a White 2.
Right.
And then after Black and White, they went X and Y. Which, and I know a lot of people that have been involved with Pokemon up until X and Y, where I think Pokemon lost like an even larger amount of their fan base is when like Sun and Moon came out, and then, you know, the most recent one, Sword and Shield. Because they did some cool things as well. I mean, as the generations go on, but if I go all the way back to Gen 1, maybe we could kind of go along the journey through there. I mean, from Gen 1 to Gen 2, one of the biggest differences I saw was the amount of dual classing.
So dual classing means what? They have two specific types, so they're fighting and fire, for example.
Exactly. So yeah, dual typing. So like they have more than one type. So if you look at lots of the Pokemon in Gen 1, lots of them are given one type, and that's throughout their evolution. But in Gen 2, you see a lot of Pokemon that either start off with the dual typing or gain dual typing as they evolve, which is really cool. Another thing that Gen 2 and Gen 3 also expand on are like the baby Pokemon.
Yeah.
So, you know, like the Pichu and the Wigglytuffs and, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, a lot of people might be surprised to know that, because I think for a long time, I personally had assumed that Pichu was part of the series for so long, not realizing that it didn't even show up till Gen 3, you know, because when I first picked up the Pokemon Fire Red or Pokemon Red, I was looking for a Pichu, but I could only find Pikachus. So that was something I had to learn firsthand myself. So a lot of these baby forms have kind of become so integrated with the lore of the franchise that now they're part of, you know, people's mindset right now.
Yeah, exactly. Like the Pichu, the Igglybuff, Togepi. Togepi was like one of the most popular baby Pokemon and was also right. in the animated series, which was like Misty's Pokemon. And that kind of helped introduce, I mean, there was a bunch of movies as well, I think, with like Elekid and Pichu. There was a couple Pokemon movies that didn't have the main gang in them.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think there were like, I know there was like a short way back when that was focused only on Pichu's adventures in the big city or something like that.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And those are what I'm talking about. It was kind of cute to see those. And it was also really kind of cool because it expanded the imagination of what Pokemon could be. So especially when you saw Pokemon like Togepi, Pichu, and from there, I think they kind of lost a little bit of their creativity. If you look at Gen 3, Gen 4, I think what Pokemon started concentrating on was the lore of Pokemon, you know, the legendaries. There are a lot of legendaries in Pokemon. I think in Gen 4.
Almost to the point where it almost makes you feel like legendary isn't even that great of a status when you think about how many legendary Pokemon there are to begin with, you know?
Yeah, I think like I was watching, when I was a child, I was watching the movie with Lugia and, you know, Moltres, Zapdos, and Articuno. But then now, like today, I'm like, oh my God, there was a Pokemon episode that had like a baby Lugia in it and a mother Lugia. So I was like, oh, I guess it's not the only Lugia out there. And, you know, if you look at other regions, they have like a different, like they have a Galarian Zapdos, a Galarian Moltres, a Galarian Articuno.
Which almost takes away from the specialty of, you know, of a Zapdos and a Moltres, right?
Exactly. I mean, the Galarian Zapdos is like an ostrich.
Oh.
It doesn't even fly.
So it's kind of like the Alolan variations of like, so they're like very big variations of what they're used to.
Exactly, yeah. Variations and Galarian variations are regional variations of Pokemon that we've grown up and loved. And that's what, I mean, it is cool. Don't get me wrong. I love that, like, Vulpix is an ice type now. You know, that we have, like, an ice type Vulpix, that we have an ice type Sandshrew. But, you know, it kind of also feels cheap that all they can do now is just take, like, the nostalgic Pokemon we love and just change their typing. Like, taking Raichu and making it a fairy type, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, so I think we're kind of going in different directions, but I want to kind of talk about what new mechanics were introduced in each different generation so that we can kind of see, like, from Pokemon Gen 1 all the way to Gen, I guess, 8 that we're on, how has the game changed, right? Because in Gen 1, if you play Pokemon Red right now, it's very different from playing Pokemon Sun and Moon, right?
Yeah, yeah. So there's a lot of things they introduced in the games I thought that were cool. You know, like how happy your Pokemon is can play into what it evolves into, I think is really cool.
Right. I think that was a big part of the Emerald generation. I think that's Gen 3, right?
Yeah, exactly. And also, like what time of day your Pokemon evolves, that was really crucial for Eevee's evolution. To see, you know, if you want an Umbreon, you need to evolve it at night. It made the game more strategic and in a way more fun, for the players. Along with that, they introduced like the Poke Eggs and like, you know, you could have different capsules to put the eggs in. And that would like, you know, increase, the time it would take for them to hatch. And then finally, like after the whole dual typing and things like that, they introduced something I thought at the time was lame, but after seeing what it was, I thought it was amazing. It was the Mega Evolutions. What's your opinion on Mega Evolved Pokemon?
So when did the Mega Evolutions come about? Was that X and Y or Black 2 or White 2?
Yeah, I think it was... So I think Black 2 and White 2 have Mega Evolutions, but X and Y is what introduced it.
Okay, so... Kind of my perspective on it is that, honestly, I'm all for anything that innovates. I'm not one of those, like, traditionalists who's like, well, back in my day, Pokemon had 3 evolutions, and that's it. No, like, I'm not one of those. I'm not one of those people one bit.
You sound like Professor Oak.
No. I do think that Mega Evolutions are a cool mechanic, and personally, I've never played the game, so again, like, tell me if I'm wrong here, but I think some of the designs are very cool. Some of the ones for, say, Charizard are kind of out there. It doesn't really fit in with the established aesthetic for Charizard. You know, it's like you all don't black and
like,
gray.
You don't like the Charizard Mega Evolutions?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're going to Mega Evolve something, it either has to be a complete, like, 180 from what we expect, or it needs to build on something from before. And the way they introduced Charizard's, like, gray color scheme is not really my favorite, personally. That's a personal take, you know?
Oh, really? I think I loved the blue fire because the blue fire showed, I mean, blue fire is hotter than orange fire. That's like, you know, every anime. So Seeing the blue flames, like just, you know, blazing outside the corner cheeks of the Charizard, I think was amazing. And so many people love shiny Charizard because of the black and gray color scheme. I thought seeing it on a Mega Evolved Charizard was also great. And I love that the typing on that Charizard was dragon. Because everyone was like, how the hell is Charizard not a dragon type or at least a dual dragon type? So seeing all of that in one, you know, Charizard was amazing. I mean, we got the dragon, we got the black, and we got like the even more powerful blue flames.
Well, you know, I mean, there are a couple variants for Charizard's Mega Evolution, right? Like I do like the one where it is more orange and blue colored. I think... Personally, for me, a Mega Evolution is just a buildup of what already has existed. And that's kind of the way I envision it. So I'm very cool with, like, Mega Alakazam, give him a bunch of spoons and with a beard and everything. That's pretty cool. That's dope. I love that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. He's going to read your mind.
Yeah. But, like, you know, some things like the Mewtwo one are just way too left field because
what?
The Mega
Mewtwo. I love the Majin
it just looks
Boo
like
looking.
The original Mew. It's like, it looks like a Mew evolution.
I mean, Mewtwo comes from Mew's genetic material. So, like,
right.
I wouldn't, that makes sense. But you don't think the Majin Buu looking Mewtwo Mega Evolution looks sick?
I think it looks cool. I just don't think it fits Mewtwo. And again, these are all like personal taste, right? Like everything that I'm saying is all personal opinion. You got like clearly we both disagree on a lot of these things. Like just looking up Mega Blaziken right now, that looks so sick. I love that.
Yeah, Mega Blaziken is fire. I get it.
Right.
What about okay, Mega Blastoise looks like a literal tank.
Yeah, but it looks ugly, man.
Yo, you don't like... Oh, no.
I hate the big, like, phallic-looking, like, water gun right at the top. It's like, bro. But, you know, like... I think it's all personal taste. So, you know, with a lot of Pokemon designs, it's kind of give or take, right?
Personally,
I think the Mega Evolution is a cool mechanic. So how does it work, specifically?
So you need to have, like, a Mega Stone on you. And I think in the anime, they really did a cool job of incorporating it. So, like, you need to have that stone. Some people have it in the form of a ring. that they always wear. Other people have it in, you know, as like a pendant on their like necklace or chain. Other people have it as a bracelet. Other people have it as like part of their hat. Other people have it as part of, you know, it's just like an accessory item, but has its own use. And with that item, your Pokemon can Mega Evolve. But I think the criteria of getting your Pokemon to Mega Evolve requires a ridiculous amount of happiness and loyalty, so that, you know, you have that connection with the Pokemon. So not any, so say I just captured a bunch of Pokemon that I know have the ability to Mega Evolve, they won't unless they have that connection with me. So in game and in anime, it introduced like a cool aspect, you know? You can't just capture a Mewtwo and then expect it to Mega Evolve.
Right, which I think it's cool too, because by adding this happiness component, what it does is kind of emphasize the whole theme of Pokemon, which is like the bond between the player and his Pokemon, right?
Exactly.
And if you can maximize that bond, then you deserve to have that Pokemon as at its absolute best. And so this Mega Stone, is it a Mega Stone or is it individual to each specific Pokemon?
It's a stone that, yeah, it's an
individual. So, but I'm saying like, if I have just regular Mega Stone, does that work on every single Pokemon, or is there a specific stone?
No, your Pokemon also needs to have that as well.
Oh, okay. Understood. Okay.
But in the anime, I think they've evolved Mega Pokemon slightly differently, but I think most of what I've seen is, like, the Pokemon needs to also have a stone. In some situations, they don't. I mean, I think in, like, they did, like, a little short where, like, Red had a Charizard who Mega Evolved without carrying a stone. So I think it is possible, but what I've seen, like in the new anime, Misty recently Mega Evolved her Gyarados, and it was the most epic-looking thing ever. And it was, like, a... you know, a shout out to Misty, who's from the original gang. So it does introduce some cool game mechanics. The next one seems a little weird, though. What they recently unleashed was the Gigantamax Pokemon. Essentially, all it does is it makes your Pokemon like much, much larger. And before you actually release your Pokemon, it increases the size of your Pokeball. And your Pokemon then has new powers and is ridiculously OP for a short, limited, you know, amount of time. I think that was a necessary, like, addition to the Pokemon world. I mean, you haven't really played any game that, I guess, incorporates that. Or maybe you haven't even seen lots of the anime material around that. But just the idea of you now being able to Snorlax your Pokemon. Like, what do you think?
Well, so, I mean, like, I'm looking at certain designs for the Gigantamaxes right now. And, you know, they don't really seem, like, fitting for the
Pikachu. No, they're disgusting. I hate them. All of them suck. I'm sorry.
Well, see, there's no reason for a Meowth Gigantamax to look like a tiny, tall, like, weasel. Right? Like, Meowth is not a creature that needs to be bigged, you know?
Oh, you gotta look at the Pikachu one. Pikachu looks like a marshmallow. Oh,
I'm looking at Pikachu right now.
Looks like a marshmallow with a thunderbolt attached to its butt.
I mean, kind of always look like that, doesn't it? I'm just kidding.
Oh my god.
But I mean, you know, some of these, it kind of makes sense with some of them that are, you know, that are like, look like they're supposed to be tanks, you know? But
yeah, like Charizard. Is not but see, one of like them. Charizard has like fiery wings instead of actual wings. Like,
right.
I don't know. It's a little bit extra in my opinion.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of the designs. I'm not a fan of its purpose either, because it doesn't seem like it adds anything more than a Mega Evolution already did. It seems like another gimmick that was added to a new generation to add some hype behind it. You know?
Yeah, and honestly, all it is a gimmick, because I think all the gens and like current day Pokemon, they kind of take away from one important aspect, which the original had, which is, you know, it was the slogan. It was like, gotta catch them all, right?
Right.
So 151, great. Gen 2, Gen 3, Gen 4, there were still like people that were interested in enough of the Pokemon that they wanted to catch as many as they could, or as many as the ones they loved. But now...
right.
We're over 1,000 Pokemon, guys. I mean, it's crazy. We're, you know, with over 1,000 Pokemon, there's no way you can catch them all. And you kind of don't even want to, because there's more trash Pokemon out there than good Pokemon. So it's like,
and I think this is a big issue. I remember reading on like Reddit and all these other like forums about how the new Pokemon games didn't have a lot of the previous Pokemon that were established. So this idea of catching them all isn't even possible because they just decided to neuter the number of Pokemon that could be captured in the first place.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the worst thing. Like some of the Pokemon you do love from the previous generations, you can't even catch because they don't exist in the game.
Right. So shifting gears a little bit, I think we talked a lot about the mechanics and how it's evolved, and I'm glad to see that we're not just mindlessly hating on new mechanics just because they're new. Glad to see we're taking a more nuanced.
Like Mega Evolution, I think was cool. The what is it? Some of the Galarian and Alolan region
Pokemon. Oh, I love some of the Alolan variations mm-hmm. too. Yeah, I've seen some of those running around.
And I wish they introduced those sooner. Like I wish we actually had like those variations sooner, like a Hoenn variation
like a Sinnoh variation exactly. of Pikachu or something like that, right?
Exactly. And that would have been kind of cool. And it would have made sense, right? Like in mm-hmm. reality, like when you have, you know, a dog or a bird from one region to another region, there are variations of that dog or bird.
Well, it's kind of ironic that you bring it up because that's actually like the real life version of evolution, right? It's a sort of natural selection and adaptation to the niche of the environment that you're in. Whereas in Pokemon, evolution is more so like metamorphosis, really.
Exactly. Yeah.
So it's funny like the Alolan variation. The Alolan variation really is like the closest thing to true evolution that we have in the Pokemon games, which is very interesting in my opinion.
Oh, that is interesting.
So jumping ahead, I think I want to talk a little bit more about the anime, and because I kind of stopped around Diamond and Pearl era, and like for a long time, the show was kind of the same thing over and over again. You have the show that follows Ash's journey. He has to get all the Pokemon badges. He somehow has amnesia about everything that happened in the previous arc and has to relearn things about the same Pokemon he encounters, right?
And then
at the end of the tournament, he loses. You have movies that are about the legendary Pokemon, which are kind of just like hype material for the games or whatever. But that's about it, right? It seems like it was kind of hitting that stride for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, originally, if you look at the anime, it was created to draw hype for the video games, and it did that
yes.
beautifully. It did that perfectly. So I think they like didn't really care about where the show was going, and the audience, right. like you know, we ate it for Gen 1, we ate it for Gen 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. It was just not cutting it, you know. It's like, for how long are you going to have Ash Ketchum make the same mistakes over and over and over again? Or even in some mm-hmm. cases, he would learn from his mistakes and then just have amnesia, like you said, completely forget that he learned about those mistakes and then just make them all over again.
Which I understand from like a writer's perspective, you don't want to be like held down by the previous continuity, and like, you know, especially a character like Ash who has been 10 years old for over 10 years now, right? You don't want to be chained to the continuity so hard. But at the same time, it kind of makes you feel like your emotional investment in this character's progression is for nothing, because in another year there's going to be a brand new season and it doesn't matter, right?
Yeah, exactly. And along with that, you end up realizing how the story doesn't really matter. Like, Ash's journey doesn't matter mm-hmm. anymore because every season's just like a restart. It's like a refresh. But the frustrating thing is, at the end or at the beginning of a lot of these shows, right, at the beginning or end of a lot of the new seasons, they always talk about Ash going to a new place or coming from an old place. So, like, they do try to connect it in that way. But then when the way the show runs itself, it doesn't feel like that. So it's even more frustrating.
Right. And then that's not even to talk about the movies, which really are just every single movie focuses on a brand new legendary Pokemon. And it always ends with Ash just forgetting the events, or the legendary Pokemon resetting everyone's memory, because we can't have Ash Ketchum having a legendary Pokemon, because then he'd actually win a championship for once in his life.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it's pretty funny. But I think the biggest disgrace to Pokemon in recent history is how they really Teen Titans it, man. It's so frustrating. They completely changed the entire art style, which makes the show look like it's for babies, but then they also dumbed it down. Like, it's literally like a children's show. Like it went from being a PG show to a G show. Like it's yeah. It's just dumbed down now.
Well, so the question really, it goes back to one of the questions we've asked ourselves way back in episode one, which is how do you keep a show relevant after a certain point? Because eventually your audience will grow out of this phase, right? So like people like us, we grew out of Pokemon around the same time, Diamond and Pearl Age. And coincidentally, and maybe not so coincidentally, that's around the time we're entering our teenage years and figuring out our own identity. We think to ourselves, oh, Pokemon's for babies. So if you're a Pokemon writer, your only option is really to double down on like, all right, people are going to call this a kid's show. This is a kid's show. Right? And let's make this easier to animate. Let's make this, let's give Ash a brand new redesign. Let's give the whole world a new redesign so that kids can just jump in and start at whatever season they
want.
I mean,
I think they should just go with new characters. Like, why do we still need to stick with Ash when they're trying to, I mean, is Pikachu, because Pikachu is definitely a hot commodity, but is Ash really a hot commodity? Like, does it really matter?
No, not particularly.
That's what I'm saying. Like,
right. Well, so this is the difference between the games and the show, right? And like, you know, I've watched a couple of YouTube videos on the Pokemon timeline. So correct me if I'm wrong here,
oh no.
But at least in one of these timelines, there's a world where Red has won, has become the champion.
Yes.
And then, the character from Pokemon Gold and Silver, I guess,
yes.
Gold
Ethan,
has to fight
yeah.
Red at the end.
Yeah.
Ethan. And he has to fight Red at the end. There's kind of this idea of continuity. There was an idea that the progress you made as Red had like an impact on history. So there's no reason they can't just do something similar for the show as they do for the games, you know?
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. Like, that's how the games handled it. And yeah, for folks that are questioning what the hell we're talking about in regards to timeline, you could definitely check it out on YouTube. There's at least 5 or 6 YouTubers that I know that made videos on this. But there's 3 timelines in the Pokemon world. This is still a theory because... the overlords at Nintendo have not made any of this official. This is just speculation, but you're right. That's how the games were handled. Ethan from Gold and Silver went to he was part of the Johto region, and Red was from the Kanto region, and the Indigo League champion is mixed from the Johto and Kanto regions. And so Ethan from Gold had to challenge Red to beat him. And that was really cool because it kind of, you know, it gave everyone that was playing Red at the time the feeling, oh my God, you know, I'm now fighting the person that I was, you know. This is like, you know, like Red
exactly.
Red is essentially like 2 or 3 years older than Gold. But like, you know, that's really cool because... You're starting over.
There's a sense of progression and continuity that as a kid you'll probably never experience. And when you see Red fighting, or so when you're playing in Pokemon Gold and you fight off against Red, it's almost a sense of like, wow, look at how far I've come as a person.
Yeah,
it almost makes yourself inserted into that story.
Exactly, and that's what I think the anime should have done. They could have at many times. I mean, they introduced the character Max. Like, they really could have. You know, Max was May's sister who wanted to be a Pokemon trainer. I mean, there's a lot of characters. They could have just introduced a new character. They could have had Ash gone through his journey without showing us and the audience be with a new character that, you know, connects to the kids.
Yeah, or even like, you know, say hypothetically, like if you want to pass the torch of Pikachu on because Pikachu represents the brand so well, like why not have like it be like, you know, almost like a sisterhood of the traveling pants, like this is a Pikachu who's been passed down through generations or whatever, right?
Oh
like,
my God. All right, this needs to be passed down to the through the Ash Ketchum lineage, but like you can have
no, but I'm saying, you know, at least like Ash Ketchum passes it down to the next person who's supposed to take up the rank as a Pokemon master and be like, oh, you know, this was given to me by my mentor or something. I don't know. I think something like that kind of like if you can, there's a way to continue the Pokemon brand and without having to rely on continuity and rely on the same character multiple years in a row, multiple decades in a row now.
Yeah. It's true. I think that would really get the show going, but I don't know. I think it might be too late for them.
It's a little bit too little too late.
Pill. Yeah. They swallowed a hard pill with this new redesign.
Well, so now I would be remiss to talk about Pokemon Go during this discussion, because this is something that blew up that summer of 2016, I believe. And it was so relevant
yes,
that it was
yes.
even brought up during like the elections, right? People, you know, Hillary,
oh my God,
Clinton,
Hillary
the Democratic
Clinton
nominee.
Talking about... No, she said we should Pokemon Go to the polls.
Oh, that's right. That's exactly what it was. Yeah. Oh my god, it was terrible. I was like, right now.
You know what? The U.S. government should definitely pay these guys to put like, you know, like legendary Pokemons at the polls. I could only imagine.
Oh my god. Well, so I mean, thinking about Pokemon Go is something that I kind of want to talk about because it was something that really appealed to everybody, right? And I know I know elderly people in like the deep south of the United States who don't know a damn thing about the Pokemon, United but play States. Pokemon Gold.
Yes.
Right? They play Pokemon Gold. Oh, sorry, Pokemon Go because for them it's an excuse to leave the house and it still is an excuse for them to leave the house. The people who play Pokemon Go right now are very passionate about Pokemon Go.
Yes. I mean, yeah. I mean, Pokemon Go was great. You definitely played it. I played it.
Yeah.
I just didn't have time to keep doing it. In Iceland, bro. I played this game in Iceland so I can get, because I think the Tauros was only in Europe or something like that. So like you could only catch. So I was literally backpacking in Iceland, walking around trying to find the Tauros because I knew after my trip in Iceland, which lasted a month, I would have to come back to the U.S. and I wanted to show everyone what I caught.
Oh my god. I will say, for that one summer of Pokemon Go, it truly seemed like there was world peace. But, you know,
you can't have nice things for too long. I thought a new type of war was going to come. It was going to be like the factions.
Oh my god. You think Team Red versus Team Blue was going to like start fighting and stuff?
Yeah, and I feel like everyone that was on Team Yellow just didn't get any attention. So,
dude, poor Team Yellow, the Hufflepuffs of this whole journey.
Yeah, they were the Hufflepuffs. Yeah.
Yeah.
Were you red or blue?
I think I was blue because most of my friends were blue.
I hate you. I was red. Oh my god. This makes so much sense.
Beifong and I born to feud with each other, man. I want to talk about that because I think it's kind of emblematic of where this franchise is going, right? Because the Pokemon Go mechanics of like catching a Pokemon translated into the Pokemon Let's Go Eevee, Let's Go Pikachu series, right?
Yes.
And it clearly is Nintendo deciding that Pokemon is now just going to be their introductory franchise. If anybody is even remotely interested in Pokemon, we're going to start them off with these like baseline level games rather than the show. They're not relying on the show. They're not relying on the hardcore RPG adventure games anymore. They're really relying on merchandise and Pokemon Go to be the fuel.
And to a degree, I think they stepped into an arena that they've never stepped into before, and I don't know if they're going to keep it going. But even like the live action movie, did you watch Detective Pikachu?
So yeah, I watched it, but I mean, I didn't think it was so okay. I thought the CGI was stellar, but I didn't think it was so revolutionary that it's going to start a brand new movement. Personally, I don't know. Maybe you can disagree.
I mean, it didn't flop, right? So at the end of the day, it made money. Did I love it? I mean, Ryan Reynolds did a great job. He's hilarious.
I think so. I mean, he kind of was just a G-rated Deadpool, you know, exactly, which is kind of who Ryan Reynolds is by default, too.
Yes, yeah, he was a G-rated Deadpool. But I thought the story could have been better for sure. It does, like, introduce, like, you know, what Pokemon might be doing in the future. Like, will we see another live-action movie, even once every 2-3 years? And they redid even the older movie, the Mewtwo movie. They redid that.
The Mewtwo CGI. Movie, yeah. But they used more CGI on this one, right?
Well, it's all CGI. I don't know. Have you seen it? I saw it. It's on Netflix for anyone who hasn't.
I never
seen
saw the remake myself. I just saw a trailer for it. So I was like, oh, they're throwing a ton of CGI at this one.
So I liked the remake. I think after maybe 5 minutes, you get used to the CGI. There were parts of the movie, I think, that were too dark. Which I think they were just trying to copy too much of the anime because there are scenes that are very dark in like tunnels and things. And in CGI, it doesn't reflect the same. So they needed to add more lighting. But honestly.
Okay. So you're talking about dark from like a lighting perspective, a thematic perspective. No.
I mean, I enjoyed it almost as much as I enjoyed the original Mewtwo movie.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so this kind of goes back to what is Nintendo's plan here? And obviously, none of us have any financial links to Nintendo, but it seems like the game plan really is let's lure in as many casual gamers or casual people as much as possible. Like this emphasis on Pokemon Go has continued. And the mechanics of Pokemon Go going into Let's Go Eevee and Let's Go Pikachu clearly show these as entry level things. Yep. And you know, why would we create a live action movie? Because most people, especially in the United States, are not likely to watch a cartoon. Rather, they'd rather watch something in live action for some reason. I mean, obviously this is an anime podcast, so we're a little bit biased here, but you know, for most people do see live action as more of a legitimate source of media than animation. So another big thing to introduce is really the idea of merchandise, right? So Pokemon, if you look at its sales, really they're not coming from the games anymore. They're not coming from the show. Nobody's buying like seasons or DVDs or Blu-rays of Pokemon. It's really coming from merchandise, right? It's coming from your buddy who got a Pikachu outfit for Halloween, or your
onesies.
Friend.
Oh my God, all the Pokemon onesies.
Yeah, Pokemon onesies, yeah. Or plushies or whatever, yeah. like the Funko Pops. Like, yep, clearly, yep. Pokemon's direction is really to reach the lowest common denominator, which may or may not be a good thing for the franchise in terms of its game mechanics going forward.
And you know, they do a pretty good job of marketing their Pokemon. I mean, I think I was talking to a friend of mine about like the Pokemon that they specifically choose to include in Smash.
Yeah,
like that's a strategical decision, right? Because why include Lucario and Incineroar? I mean, those are just two random Pokemon, right?
That's true. Like, I mean, they also have who's the one?
They have
fights like Naruto in Smash.
Oh, Greninja.
Greninja, yeah. Like Greninja is a relatively new Pokemon, and obviously, like I said, he kind of fights like Naruto, right? He has like the substitution jutsu. He has like the kunai jutsu.
I mean,
right?
Well, that just goes to like Greninja's like he's a frog ninja.
Yeah, but you know, like it's Pokemon's way of continuing marketing in different franchises.
For sure.
I mean, kind of really grabbing more surface level.
Like Incineroar in Smash is very much like a wrestler moveset. He's a tank, and he has like a grab that kind of throws you into cables and tosses you off, kind of how you'd see in, you know, WWE. So yeah, it really is interesting how they strategically pick, you know, Pichu, Pikachu, Mewtwo. You know, Incineroar, Lucario, Greninja to be the Pokemon to represent their franchise in Smash.
Right. And you know, if you're someone who plays Smash Bros all the time, which again, Smash Bros is also almost it can be as extreme as you want it to be, but it's also a great entry-level casual game too
for people
who don't typically play video games, right?
For sure.
So if you recognize a Pokemon from Smash Brothers, maybe you'll be inclined to check out Pokemon as well. So clearly Nintendo has decided we're going to go after the superficial market. We're not going to go after the hardcore market anymore, which for better or for worse, it seems to be the direction Pokemon is going in. If you disagree with that.
I think it kind of sucks for like an OG Pokemon fan, but let's see. There's always hope. Let's see where they go. I think Pokemon Go was great for that summer, and I think Mega Evolutions that came after that were really cool. So, you know, maybe there are some cool things on the horizon for Pokemon. Like the CGI movie on Netflix was great.
Yeah, I think we just need a good Pokemon Switch game, which Sword and Shield was supposed to be. And if we can get Sword and Shield 2 or whatever the equivalent is, that's just better and has refined mechanics and is more accessible, I think that'll be the thing that saves Nintendo.
You know what,
and
I
the
think
Pokemon
they
franchise
do?
Going forward.
I think they
go for
should,
it.
I think they should go back and maybe like do like a two generation combo, imagine a Gen 1 Gen 2 combo with like Alolan and Galarian forms and Mega Evolution.
So kind of go back. So kind of do these remakes, but incorporate like
some older, of these new
like
ideas,
new things into
exactly.
Well, I mean that's kind of what Omega Sapphire and Omega Ruby and Sapphire did, right?
But yeah, Omega Ruby and Omega Sapphire tried that, but I don't think they went far enough. Like, they just introduced some, like, new redesigns and, like, you know, they had some great
graphics
animation
updates.
For it. They had some great animation for it. But, you know, that's about it. They kept the characters the same. I'd love to see going back to, like, Gen 1, Gen 2 in-game and, like, facing off against Gold, you know, Ethan from Gold or Red, you know, like...
Or why not just like a Pokemon Generations type game, like, you know, all encompassing the different generations, and like each old generation is kind of its own map, and like make it a massive world in RPG form.
That
right?
would be really hard. I know that would be really
yeah.
hard.
It would be tough, but you know, I think Pokemon has been around long enough, and people are willing to cut it enough slack that it needs to take a risk. It needs to take a massive risk and really understand, like, and not hang its hardcore fan base out to dry. I think that's where it's missing here, because by putting so much attention towards the casual base, by always worrying like, oh well, we have so much continuity, we have so many Pokemon, we have so many mechanics, like, will new people get it? But there are great games out there that do similar things as Pokemon, right? Pokemon paved the way for a lot of these RPGs to develop, and They do it just fine. You can have a complicated story. You can have complicated mechanics, and people will still buy into it as long as it's a good product.
Yeah, but I think going back, just thinking about it, like, the show is really what, you know, like, it's really what drew people to the games, because people felt like they wanted to catch pocket monsters. And,
right.
You know, right now the show is trash. So, you know, I feel like, you know, like they, yeah, I mean, let's see. This I mean, goes, I, this I do goes have back. High hopes. I do have high hopes for Pokemon, just because, you know, every now and then they throw something out there that I can get behind. And so that's all for I sure. expect from them now.
Yeah, and I think that's a perfect way to cap off our episode. So thank you so much for tuning in to Talk No Jutsu. I'm your co-host, Lao Guy.
And here I'm Admiral Beifong. If any of you guys are interested in the D&D homebrew game that I'm setting up, please let me know.
And we'll catch you on the next episode of Talk No Jutsu. Stay tuned.